All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of the Tune In a Podcast. We are coming thick and fast with content this week, as there's plenty to cover. Basically, going to give you a quick rundown of what I expect from today's episode. We're going to talk about the potential new director of football, the Formula One promo, what that may or may not look like for the club, a few transfer updates, and then we're going to kick off with a preview of the upcoming all-important Brighton game this weekend. But I'm joined by Mark down in Brisbane. How are you doing, mate?
Yeah, doing okay. It's been a bit of a weird couple of weeks with plenty of public holidays coming thick and fast, which means I've still got 5 days of work to do in 4 days every week. So, it's a little bit on the stress side at the moment, but, we soldier on and keep looking forward to the football, which is driving us on at the moment.
Absolutely. Three games left to go, three massive games. Everything's all still to play for. But we're going to dive straight in, talking about the director of football position at Newcastle United. Now, there's been an ongoing debate as to who is going to be the key man for this role. A few names have been whittled down, and the two names that have come up is Dougie Friedman of Palace, and I want to hopefully get the pronunciation right, of Johannes Spohr of Genoa. He's a German fella. Really don't know much about him, apart from he's part of the 777 group, who aren't exactly fan favourites over here in Australia, over in certain parts of Merseyside as well. But Mark, I'll ask you this question. How important is it to have this wrapped up as soon as possible? And you think it'll accelerate Greenfinger's Ashworth's release from the club?
I don't know if it's going to accelerate Ashworth leaving the club. I think the club are going to hold on. I firmly believe that one of the major sticking points and the reason why they're asking for more with Ashworth leaving is they don't want him to take his position up at Man United before the end of this transfer window. I think they want to get their business done without his inner working knowledge interfering with their plans potentially. So I fully think that he will either stay that out. The club will leave him on gardening leave for as long as they need to, until they either get a reasonable fee for him or they get him past the transfer window and into their own timeframes. From that point of view, I personally don't think the club are really too bothered. I think they're quite happy to appoint someone new, get them working, and let the Ashworth saga kind of play out in the background. I don't think it's going to affect the new role as such. Hopefully we get this sorted before the transfer window, though, as again, because we want to basically hit the ground running. We've got a lot of work to do, and we'll discuss some of the transfer news, I guess. So we're obviously not holding back, even though we don't have a director of football, so we'll see what happens with that.
Now, Dougie Friedman is quite well known at Palace, signed some very good players in his time there. And Eze and Olise, who both shone in the 4-0 win against Man United. I don't know much personally of this other bloke from Genoa. Have you heard much of him at all?
Haven't heard of Dickie Bird. But the warning signs are there for him having anything to do with 777. Obviously, there's all sorts of shit hitting the fan down here in Australia with Melbourne Victory. So Dimmy would be the best person to talk to about all of the shit show that's going on with them owning like a controlling partner. Obviously, the whole cock up with Bonza Airways, which you yourself have been a victim of, given that that's who you'd booked your flight to Melbourne with for the Tottenham game. And then obviously Everton are being well and truly screwed over in the UK. And as much as we don't like Everton and we'd like to see them potentially get relegated and a little bit of a kind of a reality check almost. Nobody wants to see them go bust, which is very, very likely if the worst case scenario goes through with what's actually happening at the moment.
Yeah, it's a very, very strange situation. The Everton board have said they want this sorted as soon as possible, which you don't blame them because it's dragged on for too long. Obviously not as long as our takeover did. That thing went on for close to 2 years, if I remember rightly. But it's definitely a strange, sticky situation. But Dougie Friedman is the one that Bobby, who is our fountain of knowledge, has mentioned ages ago before his name was even thrown into the hat. Bobby's very knowledgeable on these types of things, so hopefully he is the right man for the job. And compensation apparently won't be any issue at all with Palace, from what I've been reading. So that should be a case of a proper approach rather than a backdoor entry, unlike what Manchester Red's done with, again, Green Fingers Ashworth. And hopefully we can get this person nailed in, and he's at his desk before the transfer window opens on the very early stages of the window, so we can get cracking on with some quality targets moving forward. But now, Mark, we're going to talk about this weird promo that Saudi Airlines or Saudi Airways, whatever it may be called, and Formula E have done in collaboration with the club. Have you seen the video?
I have. I don't know if I've seen the full video, but I've seen the snippets of it on social media and that today.
So for those that haven't seen it, basically it shows a Formula E car, which looks very similar to Formula One car, driving what looks like through parts of Northumberland, then into the city centre. And the camera then pans up to St. James's Park, goes to the changing rooms. There's a bloke in a racing outfit, effectively, and he goes to take off his helmet, and then it basically says all will be revealed soon, or something along those lines. What it is, who it is, no one really knows, but there's a lot of speculation online that this could be a very elaborate way for Isak's contract extension, which apparently has been doing the rounds. Your thoughts on that potentially being the case, Mark? Personally, I think it's a bit ludicrous.
I always get a kick out of Newcastle fans on social media. We have plane spotters, we have like legal experts, we have training ground experts, we have medical practitioners, top physios in the land. They know the injuries before they have. They've literally been looking at the fingers and the hands of the person in the suit, trying to establish that, oh no, it's definitely Isak's hands. And it's like, well, you know, come on, like, guys, we don't know if the contract's been signed, we don't know whether it's a new contract, we don't know what's going on with that. It's a promotional video. It kind of makes sense if it was a Newcastle partnership, and maybe it's a training grounds sponsor deal, who knows? Like, nobody's really sure. The one thing that I would actually really love to see from this, though, is a Formula E race in Newcastle. I think that's a perfect opportunity for them to have that extra partnership in the city, and you know, like, you know, close the streets off, have a street race around Newcastle. Could be quite good. But yeah, look, I mean, leave it to social media boffins to overanalyze things, eh?
It's definitely one of the stranger ones I've seen, but fair credit. It looks like a pretty good promo from what we can see, but obviously what it is nothing but pure speculation right now. No doubt everyone would love Isak tied down to a better, improved contract, because I'm sick of reading every other tweet that he's signing for Arsenal for only 20 million or something like that. The fee is getting ridiculously low. We need the money, so they're going to give us some of their shit players and have Isak in return. It's starting to get a bit stupid now for that type of thing in the market.
Oh, for sure. Look, I think there's probably a little bit of truth in the rumors of it being Isak, whether it's about his contract. By all accounts, there was some like NBC News thing that had a leak about what the actual promo video is going to be, and it was like Isak's been away for a few days. He's then flown back over on Saudi Air, and he hops in a Formula E car to get to training on time, or something like that. Anyway, so there is definitely an element of that is probably likely to be Isak in some kind of club sponsor deal, but whether it's a new contract deal, who knows? I'm well and truly getting sick and tired of the transfer rumors, though. You look at it's like every single day there's some new in the know account, there's some new gossip rumor mill going around, whether it's Isak one day or Bruno the next. I think you shared one earlier on today where an Arsenal account had effectively said, we don't think we'll be able to afford Bruno before June because of FFP, but maybe Newcastle let us have him for less than the 100 million release clause, so we might get him for 80 million instead. It's like, on what planet is that a logical deal? It's like, well, you know what? You can't afford him for 100 million, so I tell you what, hey, we'll do you a favor. We'll let you have him for 80 million quid. Like, we'll hit you back up for a favor in return at some point. It's like, come on, it's ridiculous.
It really is. It's almost laughable now because it's not just one a day. It's two, three, four, five a day it's happening. But that's actually a very good segment now to bring us on to our next topic, which is two potential signings for Newcastle this coming summer transfer window. Now, the main one, whose name has been linked with us for a good while now, is Lloyd Kelly. This is definitely gathering pace, and there's been a few big names, journalists, whoever, reportedly said that the deal is all but done, just effectively waiting for the ink to dry on the contract. Now, tapping up doesn't seem to be a thing anymore, Mark. How are Newcastle able to get around this whole approaching players? Yes, he's in the last 6 months of his contract, but you can't talk to players as soon as
you're in the last 6 months of your contract, you're actually allowed to speak to the players.
Even if it's in the same league, okay. I thought that was a different... Okay, fair enough.
Is it? Who knows? I mean, it doesn't seem to be a thing these days anyway. But,
it doesn't, does it?
I was under the impression that it was above board as long as they were within the last 6 months of their contract.
Lloyd Kelly is obviously somebody who Eddie Howe knows quite well. He signed him, I think it was Bristol City, if I'm correct on that one. It was definitely one of the Bristols for Bournemouth back in the day. For 13 million quid, I think it was. He's now running his contract down. He will be leaving on a free. And it looks as though we are front runners in getting his signature. And the other name, and again, I'm going to absolutely butcher the pronunciation of this, is Tosin Adebayo. Again, I apologize if I've absolutely annihilated that. He has reportedly turned down a move to Spurs. Now, whether that puts us in the driving seat to get his signature is another matter altogether. But it does look as though if he is turning them down, we could be then one of the shortlist players that one of the shortlist clubs that he may be looking to sign for. You're a big fan of getting these two players on free, aren't you, Mark?
Look, I think it makes a lot of sense. And I know that we're going to end up with a lot of criticism that it's another Bournemouth player and Eddie Howe's only interested in English Bournemouth players and all the rest of that sort of stuff that normally comes with these sorts of transfer window sort of stories doing the rounds. But look, I'm worried about Lloyd Kelly for his fitness. He doesn't exactly have a great fitness record, so I don't see how that gets any better coming here, coming to Newcastle. But what I will say is if you can get one's 26, one's 25, they're both tall, they're both strong, fit, athletic kind of center backs. They can both probably fill in it. Well, I mean, Kelly can play left back if we need him to as well. I don't see them, either of them, being automatic first choice. I think as soon as Botman's fit, he's the first choice at left centre-back. I don't think we can complain at that. But if you're upgrading from a Paul Dummett and maybe a Lascelles, as well as they've done over the years, if you're upgrading those positions, then you're automatically making the squad depth better. And to get both of those players in on free transfers, I know wages aside and all that sort of stuff and signing on bonuses and what have you, the wages may be an issue in terms of the profit and sustainability rules that have just been implemented, but you're not paying a massive fee out, which frees up money that can be then spent elsewhere on probably like more crucial positions. I think we need a right attacking forward option. I think we probably need another goalkeeper. So there's money that needs to be spent on them to get the quality we need. We could potentially be looking at a new striker if we go in with, there's rumors going around today that Callum Wilson cancelled an event last night because he's injured again. How much of that's just people putting two and two and making nine out of it? I don't know, but look, his injury record isn't great, so I think we do need to invest in another forward, whether or not it's to replace him or, as a third option, because he can't stay fit. I genuinely don't know, but having that extra money up our sleeves, because we haven't gone out and paid, that 20, 30, 40 million for a new centre half that is literally just for squad depth, and that's all they're for. Let's remember, unless they come in and Eddie Howe works his magic and turns them into World Cup winners or something. We need to be looking at the more important positions for that transfer fee budget to go on if we've got options there that are more than adequate for free transfers for other positions.
Yeah, absolutely. There's definitely places we need to strengthen. I mean, we've still got the likes of Matt Target. He seems to be a forgotten man at the minute. He's a left back. Whether he'll stay around next season or not, there's another matter. But again, could generate some funds if needed, if he does need to be moved on. We will see in that regard for the transfers. Now, with Dougie Friedman being linked with the director of football role, instantly, Eze and Elise have been linked with the club. Apparently, Elise has a £60 million release clause in his contract for clubs that qualify for Europe or play in Europe. Given his age, his talent, and the absolute potential he's got, but his dodgy injury record, is that a figure you'd be willing to pay? Just as a random question?
I think it's a risk. Look, I think he's an absolutely phenomenal talent. And if we do end up with Friedman in as the director of football, and he can kind of identify those sorts of players at that sort of level for us. I mean, the young centre half that he got from Blackburn, Wharton? He's been a revelation as well. And he's not buying them for huge amounts of money. So you're kind of thinking, well, he's coming here with a potentially bigger budget to buy, you know, sort of maybe a higher floor and a higher ceiling type player. So you'd like to see that. For me, Elise, Eze as well. Yeah. They're fantastic talents. They're super, super quick. They're like, you know, they cause teams problems. But, you know, that there's no point getting them if they're not fit. And for that kind of money, you'd want to be getting a player that's pretty much guaranteed to be playing 30, 40 games a season minimum. And I don't think they are at the moment. So it is a big stretch. It's a big risk. And I'm not convinced many clubs are actually going to be willing to take that risk at the moment with the financial climate the way it is.
Yeah, couldn't agree more with that. And Elise, he's 22 years old and he's had 4 major hamstring injuries already, which is a big thing, which is a major put off in my opinion. But yeah, who knows what's going to happen in the summer transfer window. The right side of midfield is something that will be improved, hopefully. It's something that's been talked about for quite some time, and hopefully that is something we can strengthen moving forward. But now we're going to move on to the game at the weekend. It's a traditional 3 o'clock kickoff at St. James's Park. Newcastle take on Brighton, so it's a Magpies versus the Seagulls. This is a pretty big game, isn't it, Mark, in terms of what it represents, what it stands for, and what it could also bring come the final whistle?
I think they're all big games at the moment. It feels like we're saying that every single week at the moment. We got to the point where it was like, I was almost ready to write the whole season off, going, look, just screw it, write it off, can it now. Let's just get everyone fit and start again. Like, we'll wipe the slate clean. And Eddie Howe's kind of just gone, we've got this. And he's hit the reset button mid-season again. And we've just gone on from strength to strength. We know Palace game aside, we didn't play well in that. They did play very, very well. We've seen them beat other sides, though, so they're in really good form. So as much as that was a disappointing game, I don't think it's like as embarrassing as what was made out after the game. We've got some very, very good results of late. And I think if we can build on the game the other day and get 3 points, I mean, as an away performance as well, that was fantastic. But, you know, to get a solid 3 points at home against Brighton, which, you know, we should be. Brighton, we're at home. I keep saying they've not got a good record at St. James's Park, and everyone keeps criticizing me saying that they do. But, you know, look, we need to beat them at home. And if we beat them at home, the Man United game is literally the clinching of the deal. I'm still worried about Chelsea in the background. Don't get me wrong. I think they've hit form at the complete wrong time of the season for us. But if I'm being honest with you, this game here, if we can win this and win it comfortably, then I think we've got every chance of actually getting that European qualifying spot. You know, it all comes down to the Old Trafford trip. Man United are in free fall at the moment. And, you know, hopefully we can repay the favour when they hit form at the wrong time for us last year when we met them in the cup final.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's going to be a big game. But Brighton, they haven't won away from home since middle of February. And that was against Sheffield United when they won 5-0. But everyone wins at least 5-0 at Sheffield United these days. That's nothing out of the ordinary. But a few absentees for them. They've got no Evan Ferguson, which is a big boost considering the way he tore us a new one earlier on in the season in the opening few games with that hat-trick down at the Amex. João Pedro, he's a player that we were linked with. Was it this time or the winter transfer window, Yegon, I think it was, something like that. And it was a player that looked like all nailed on to be signing for us. Fabrizio Romano famously tweeted out that it was a done deal and he's pretty much a Newcastle player. Then he retracted his comment and said, sorry, made a bit of a balls up. What have you made of Pedro at his time at Brighton?
I'll be honest, I haven't really paid much attention to him. Because work's been so busy and all the focus of any kind of football has just been purely on Newcastle and trying to get stuff ready. And obviously the last few weeks have been crazy with the whole Melbourne announcement. I've not really paid much attention to any other teams apart from the big ones who are having meltdowns like Man United and Liverpool. And obviously you get Arsenal thrown in your face because they should be winning the league, but they're not. And it's all going to come down to Anthony Gordon taking the ball out and it's not being called. So, you know, it's one of those things where you don't hear a lot about these teams sort of further down the league. And given the absolute wank fest that was the De Zerbi love-in earlier on this season, how he was the best manager on the planet and he was destined for great things and it's all gone a little bit tits up with him now. We haven't really been hearing a lot about it because he's not been winning. In fact, they've been playing absolutely appallingly badly. I've seen the results, but not really paid much attention to individual players. Look, I think he was one of those players that we thought would have been that third striker / right wing attack option. Young player, good potential. Wasn't ever really going to be that tried and tested, ready-made player to come and walk in and be that instant option. He was always going to be that sort of that longer term approach. But I think if Brighton are after him, they've got him. You've got to think with their track record of bringing players on, if they continue that, then you should kind of perform for them, and then he'll get sold to Chelsea for like 120 million.
Well, Pedro, he's got 9 goals and 2 assists in 29 games, which doesn't sound that great, but he started just less than half of those. So it's not a bad return.
That's not too bad.
And say, Brighton have been struggling recently, as you've mentioned. Yeah. So they haven't been hitting the back net as frequently as they would have liked to. But the other player that I've been looking at, the weaknesses in their squad. And the other one is Joel Veltman, who is their right back. Now, his positional play seems to be quite good, very similar to Botman, but he has no pace. He is shit slow by all accounts. So in terms of Gordon being able to exploit that, to get in and around the back, get those balls in Isak or Wilson, whoever is going to be starting, that to me is probably the weak link in their defence. But also you've got the likes of Lewis Dunk, who's now, 310 years old? I'm not sure. He should be pushing alongside a Zimmer frame on that sort of thing. He's gradually declining as a player. So hopefully, again, the pace that we can possess, we can get in around the back and attack them and get a few goals in there. Now, I don't know if you remember the Brighton game of last season at St. James's, which we won 4-1. But basically, we let them have the ball. We let them play. We let them dictate, mainly for the end of the first half and the majority of the second, because we knew they weren't going to do much with it, and we literally controlled the entire game. Do you see the game panning out the same way? Early press, sit back, defend, and then go for the jugular?
I think Brighton play that way, and I think we're more than happy to do that. If we let Brighton kind of kick the ball around in midfield and in their back line, catch them on the break, we're gonna win the game, and we're gonna win it comfortably, because the one thing we are very, very good at is counter-attacking football. As you said, you know, we've got the pace, we've got the legs on them in terms of their defenders. You kind of hope that they kind of try that tactic again. If they push up, then you know, leave space in behind. Then that's a death sentence for them, really. I mean, we've seen Villa tried it. They failed. Most teams that try to sort of sit there and dictate play against us are going to come unstuck. Tottenham tried it. You know, if you leave any amount of space in behind, the sheer pace of Gordon and Isak on the counter, add Murphy into that. We've got Miggy coming back from injury as well now. You know, Harvey Barnes is no slouch going forward as well. So we've got that counter-attacking pace. We've got Bruno, who just seems to be able to ping balls from anywhere. So yeah, look, I think I'd be very happy if it plays out like that again. It's not the easiest to watch. So I'm just watching as kind of sit back and try and soak up pressure. But you know, if it comes out with 3 points at the end and a few extras on the goal difference column, then yeah, I'm all for it.
But this is the start 11 that you put together earlier on today. It's different from the one that just beat Burnley at the weekend. Do you want to go through your 11 for us, please, Matt?
Yeah, look, I think the back five probably picks itself at the moment. We've got very few options. Nobody seems to know what's happening with Trippier, so I'm guessing he's still out. We've got no fit centre-backs, so as much as Man United want to sit there and bitch and moan about them having no centre-backs, we've literally got Dan Byrne, who is only back at centre-back because, you know, we have no one else to play there, and he's played, like, what, 2 seasons for us at left-back now? Yeah. The only thing for me, I think, would probably be Dubravka and whether or not Pope's back fit. But, you know, at this stage of the season, you don't really want to be bringing in a keeper that's been out for a while and hope that he sort of hits the ground running. I'd probably bring Anderson back in for that little bit of extra run, a little bit of sort of extra energy in midfield. The 4-4-2 seemed to work the other day, but whether or not we stick with that, I don't know. Murphy, I think, has been outstanding the last few games. And Gordon and Isak, I think they're just gonna tear them apart. So for me, that's probably the more logical one. The only issue will be whether or not we end up playing Joe Linton if he's fully fit and Howe wants to start him. But after he's just come back from surgery, we know Howe likes to kind of ease players back in. So I really can't see him starting.
Yeah, I'd be happy with that 11, to be honest. And I'd also be happy if you went with the lineup against Burnley, because, like I say, it did seem to work. The only thing is Wilson getting extra game time out of him. I think he's probably suited best to an hour, 70 minutes max. And then when he comes off, it's a case of change formation or drop somebody else up top alongside Isak. It's a strange one, because the last thing we want to do is running in the last two final games with Wilson picking up another injury. Because when he's on form, he's one of the best strikers in Europe, effectively, as he proved at this stage of last season.
Yeah. Look, I think he'll probably want to be managing his time, because I mean, if he can come and score a few goals, he'll obviously have his eye on the England squad and see if he can get back in that. England could probably do a worse thing than actually have him, to be honest, because, you know, even just bringing him off the bench, if you need a late goal, he certainly doesn't need many chances to put one away. So, you know, he offers that little bit something different for us as well. To me, I think it's just nice to start and get some options on the bench again. You know, like we've got our number one goalkeeper back. We've got a couple of midfield options. We've got a few forward options now. And it's like, you know, how can bring fresh legs on late in the game? And it's just, when was the last time we weren't going into games with a bunch of kids and two goalkeepers and Matt Ritchie sitting there looking after the creche? It's like, to me, it's a breath of fresh air seeing some bodies get back on that bench that we can call on to make a difference or see out games. It's actually really good.
So the two other teams that are in and around us, Man United and Chelsea, both are pushing for six along with us. They kick off at a slightly later 10, though. So Chelsea have the evening kickoff away to Forest, and Man United kick off having it's Monday morning for us at home to Arsenal. Would you rather be in our position and kick off first, or would you rather take the later kickoff, knowing what results have already gone ahead of you?
100% be in our position. Get the points on the board, put the pressure on. You don't want to have pressure put on you and then have to perform and you start the game slowly and suddenly you're shitting your pants because you might drop some points and then you're further behind. And now get the points on the board, go out, play well. There's no pressure on us to make sure we get the win, other than just being able to get the win. And there's no like letting up of pressure either, because someone else lost and you think, oh, well, we don't need to win that as much anymore. And so you might be tempted to take the foot off the gas. To me, get the points on the board, go out there, play well, and then see what happens with everyone else.
Well, this is the league table. So we sit in sixth, Brighton are down in 11th. 9 points behind us. So even if we were to lose our last three games and Brighton were to win their last three, mathematically, due to goal difference, they shouldn't be able to overtake unless there is a sudden goal hole at Brighton and we start leaking goals like we used to. So that is pretty much a given. We will finish above Brighton. But like I say, it's those positions between Chelsea and Man United. Those are the two other teams fighting for six. However, fifth still isn't even tied up properly yet. Spurs, they're in a horrid run of form right now. Yes, they've still got to play Sheffield United and Burnley, but they've still got Man City in there. If they drop points against, I think it's Sheffield United they've got this weekend, I might be wrong on that one, and we get 3 points against Brighton, you reckon fifth could potentially be on the cards?
I think even for Spurs, that's going to be some Spursy stuff to do. I just can't see us making up that gap. I mean, even they've got to beat Sheffield and Bournemouth. Is it Bournemouth they're playing?
Burnley,
yeah. So, you know, like I think Burnley's probably going to be down by the time they play them. I think we put the nail in that coffin. Sheffield's already down. You don't know how it plays out. Maybe Sheffield go out there and play without any pressure because there's no expectations on them, and Spurs have all the pressure on the world. And I just can't see them dropping enough points for us to catch them. Even for Spurs, that would be something special. I would be ecstatic with sixth spot. I don't see the point in getting fifth. I don't think it's a Champions League spot anyway, is it? No, I think now. we all ballsed up enough in Europe to make sure that the coefficient wasn't going to give us that extra spot. So yeah, look, for me, just finish above Man United. Like, just for the first time in the Premier League, we can finish above Man United, and it will be oh so sweet. They are literally in free fall. I hope they don't sack Ten Hag before we play them, because that's usually the way these things work. A team that is woefully out of form, we're just about to play them, they replace the manager and get a new manager bounce just before we play them. So yeah, hopefully they'll stick with him a little bit longer, and then we can actually, you know, just get those points on the board and sort of another trip to Europe. I'm happy for the Europa League. To be honest, yeah. I'm happy with the Europa Conference League, to be honest. As long as we've got some kind of European football, it just gets us in that mentality of playing in Europe, playing midweek, gets Eddie Howe more used to rotating the squads. So I think it's a huge thing for us to qualify for Europe again. And given the season we've had with the injuries we've had and where we all kind of thought this season was going to end up petering out to, that will be some achievement as well.
Really well, considering even the top 10 finish looked a bit dodgy at one point.
Yeah.
Finishing six would be a monumental achievement. It really would. But we'll wrap that up there, Mark. All I'm going to get now is your prediction for the Brighton game this weekend.
So I've been intentionally picking draws and losses because I figured I'm reverse jinxing the club. And so I'm taking responsibility for our upturn in fortune for doing that. At the risk of undoing it, I am actually going to go for a home win. I think we will have enough to beat Brighton side that has been struggling on the road. I think we've been pretty good at home. We're scoring goals for fun. I think there's only three on that table. I think there's only three teams that have scored more goals than us this season. We finally seem to have sorted out our defensive stability as well, which is quite ironic given the fact that we're missing so many defenders. But yeah, look, I'll go for a 3-1.
Yep, 3-1. Well, I said a while back on a podcast with Lee, I can't remember, I think it was the Sheffield United review. I think it was, at least anyway, where I said Isak is going to get a hat-trick at the Brighton game. So I'll let everyone head down to the bookies early, get the decent prices because it's going to happen. So I want another 4-1 win just like against Burnley. Don't know why, but like I say, we are scoring goals for fun at home, and it'll just be a replica of the result last season as well. And hopefully it's a nice, comfortable 4-1. We're 2-1 before we turned the screw last season. Well, maybe a little bit uncomfortable for some, but yeah, I'll take a 4-1 win all day long, every single day. You're going for 3-1. I'll get you.
I'll go for 3-1. I will be quite happy to see the rest of the season out with jammy 1-0 wins. I don't care how they come, as long as we get 3 points on the board.
Yeah, Howball versus De Zerbi ball, and hopefully Howball comes out on top.
Indeed.
But yeah, It'll be an absolute cracking game. Midnight for us, 3 o'clock back in the UK. We will be up watching as per usual. But stick around for the review of that game, which should be out later on the Sunday for that one. And if you haven't already, check out the interview we just done with Adam Pearson as well. That's a cracking insight of how his day surrounding Newcastle United looks. But that'll do us today, Mark. Thank you very much for joining. Excellent. And I will see you on the next one. Let's get this 3 points and let's push for Europe.
Indeed. Let's get in. Cheers, Craig.
See you later, mate. Bye.